This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Morning, folks, and welcome in. It is Money Moves here on the Vegas Stats and Information Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, flying solo today, at least like in terms of hosting. We got plenty of great guests that are going to be on tap to join us. We have a lot to get to in the world of sports. Also, it's a big day. I'm not going to go too far off the reservation. Our crew is already very nervous because it's just me in control of everything. But today, of course, we get the unveiling of the bracket for the college baseball tournament. So that'll be fun as well if we can get our eyes on that. I believe that's unveiled at about right now. But before we get to all of that, we have to get ready for the show. So let's start it as we usually do.
Time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
As I mentioned, we're going to try to span the globe here, much like our usual host, Stormy Bonatoni, who is across the pond. French Open is underway. Zach Cohen will join us, one of our regular guests and writers up at the website of VSiN.com, practically runs the website. We'll get his insight on the French Open. He's got a really strong passion for the NBA, but I dare to say that Zach probably has a stronger passion for tennis. He also has a passion for the network, and I think he's probably watching right now, so we'll see if he can answer that question, and a little bit on the NBA as well. He'll be joining us coming up in about 15 minutes. It is Monday, despite the fact that we are not graced by the presence of Stormy Bonatoni. We will still do our call me crazy, but got a couple of things for you here. A division bet to make in the National Football League that ties into Will You Call Me Crazy? And in addition to the Cy Young portfolio in the American League, and it is not who you think it is after yesterday's performances in Major League Baseball, although it was a very, very incredible performance yesterday in Major League Baseball in the American League. And last but certainly not least, to where we start our show here today, out in Indiana, the Knicks, they ain't dead yet. New York comes storming back from another 20-point deficit. This one a little bit earlier in a contest, but still coming back once more and getting a win 106-100 over the Indiana Pacers. Knicks close is about 1.5-point favorites, winning that game. Excuse me, 1.5-point underdogs, winning that game outright. Game goes under the total for the second straight time in this series. You know, I texted Zach Cohen, who's going to join us coming up here in about 10 minutes, yesterday, as well as Kelly Bedlin. I did not get a response, so I think it speaks to how our group chat dynamic works. Which was just, you know, sometimes it helps to have Karl Anthony Towns on your team. And I think that's ultimately where you end up. Karl Anthony Towns scores 20 points in the fourth quarter. He is the second Knick, how about this, ever to record 20-plus points in a fourth quarter of the playoffs in the play-by-play era. The other, Jalen Brunson in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference semifinals against Indiana last year. So when that series went down against Indiana, you had one of those performances from Brunson last night. It was all about Karl Anthony Towns. But the real story, I think, outside of just having a dominant player like Karl Anthony Towns, who is really doing all of it. He was hitting from three. He was driving to the basket. He was cutting to the hoop on some pick rolls and just some actions in general and finishing within 4 feet of the basket. Also played some pretty good defense, and I thought that was really part of this. The real story overall, the Knicks defense, which we'll get to, combined with the Pacers offense completely disappearing. Offensive rating a 105.3 for the Indiana Pacers for the game. They average 0.875 points per possession in the half court. That's abysmal. 0.8 points per possession in the fourth quarter. This was a offense that through the first two rounds and two games of this series had been unstoppable, and yet it completely dried up at home in the later portions of that game last night. Let's hear from Rick Carlisle after the game, because that was the big talking point. What happened to your offense in the second half?
Well, they had a lot of their better defenders in the game in the second half, and that makes it harder. And so, you know, you've got to grind defensively to get rebounds, and there's a different element of grinding when you're going against their better guys. And so we're going to have to do better in a lot of those situations. And, you know, there were times we got good shots and just simply didn't hit them.
You know, it's an interesting thing that you hear there from Carlisle, which is they had a lot of their better defenders on the floor during that stretch. You know who wasn't on the floor during that stretch was Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson has not really been good in this series. Yes, he's averaging 34 points, 5.7 assists on 48.6% shooting. But through three games in a series in which the Knicks have been outscored by just two measly points, they are minus 10 in his minutes on the floor. And one of the really big things that the Pacers have done is go after him and go after Karl Anthony Towns when they're on the floor together. In this series, When Carl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson are on the floor together, they have a negative 24.5 net rating. Their defensive rating, 134.4, absolutely abysmal. But we have now seen in two games here in the series where long stretches of minutes, largely due to Jalen Brunson being in foul trouble, in two of the three games we've seen so far, he's committed five fouls. He's, again, been pretty atrocious for the most part. He has been a very big liability defensively. They have gone after him at times. Karl Anthony Towns with him at the point of attack has been pretty poor defensively for the most part as well. And it seemed that Tom Thibodeau decided, or maybe stumbled into, a little bit of a secret of staggering these guys out a little bit more, putting Brunson on the floor without Karl Anthony Towns, putting Towns on the floor without Jalen Brunson, and putting a bunch of defenders together that ultimately could guard a little bit better. I think that that's going to be a very interesting aspect. You're not benching Karl Anthony Towns. You're not benching Jalen Brunson. They're still going to play multiple minutes together. But it goes back to one of the points that we had discussed heading into the series and what I brought up with Stormy, which was if there was going to be something in the series that was going to burn New York, it was going to be the fact that in the regular season, this is a team against top 10 opponents that was 23rd, 24th, the non-garbage time defensive rating, that was really abysmal when it came to the way that they had played on that end of the floor against some of the best opponents. And I think that was really what you kind of saw, what you've seen throughout this series, throughout the first three games. So that, I think, is a little bit of an issue for New York. But they still get the win. They still cut the series deficit in half. It is now 2-1, which is still pretty manageable here. But from the Pacers' perspective, this is what I think is pretty fascinating through three games. The Pacers, one of the other big aspects of this, right? It was actually the opening graph when I wrote the series preview up on the website. The pace, right? The two different types of paces in what we're going to see. Indiana, because of their namesake, of course, they like to run. They like to get up and down the floor. They have largely controlled tempo in this postseason against their opponents. The Knicks, they're a slow team. They're a grindy team. Listen to Tyrese Halliburton here because he's asked a question about some of the new faces, right? Tying into what we talked about. Brunson's in foul trouble, all sort of things. And so you see some different guys off of the bench, but he gets into a key point here about the way the Pacers are running their offense. And I think it really does stand out amongst what he's saying here to the media.
I mean, you know, with other guys playing, you know, those are, you know, I think those, especially their, I'm all for the guys who played off the bench are really defensive guys, you know, and they come in and wreak havoc. And I thought we just didn't do a good job of, you know, continuing to play fast. You know, I felt like I did a poor job of keeping pace in the game, especially in the fourth there. I felt like I was walking the ball up every play. So I know it's a big area of improvement for me. I already know that's what I'm going to see on the film most of the time. So just got to do a better job of keeping pace in the game. You know, obviously a 42-point half isn't, you know, isn't us. You know, so we'll see what we can do better there and we'll improve on it.
That's the thing that's been this series that I think is kind of hung over. We haven't talked about enough. They haven't been them this whole time in terms of pace. Yes, they have two wins, both of them in New York, but this series is being played at the Knicks tempo. Series for the so far through three games, series pace, 94.4, we'll round up. The Pacers were at 99.3 heading into this series in the early portions of the postseason. They ran even faster in the regular season. And this is a series in which a berth in the NBA Finals is on the line. As this series gets extended out and as it gets deeper, especially if we get to game 6 and 7, this is only going to slow down more. And I think that is a really big warning sign for Indiana. It's not like you're going to lose this series or anything like that. But again, tempo and pace is a very big portion of it. Go back to game one. You would sit there and say, all right, well, final and overtime, both teams scored over 130 points. Pacers got to run their stuff in that game. No, they didn't. That game only had 106 possessions, and that includes overtime. If you look at it from a, you know, if you extrapolate it out over just a regular game in regulation, that was still well below 100 possessions. And I think that's going to be the other factor as we move forward. Look, the last two games have gone under the total because this has been playing more like how the New York Knicks want it. And it's just fair to ask the question for Indiana, if you wonder after today or after yesterday, is the historic shooting streak that we have seen from this Indiana Pacers team in terms of the record-setting effective field goal percentage of the first two rounds, in terms of winning these games in the clutch time that have been absolutely insane, right? The whole, not since 1970, not since 1990, not since ever have these teams won in these scenarios, and the Pacers have done it multiple times. You do wonder if that runs out, and if this is the point where it does. But the Pacers still have plenty of hope. And I'm going to say this, too. it was an oddly passive game for Tyrese Halliburton. And I think that's going to be something as we move forward in the series, what that's going to mean. Because he also noted in the media availability that he was bothered by Robinson's presence at the rim. Mitchell Robinson, of course, getting the start yesterday. NBA tracking data, he had 8 drives to the basket in the postseason. He only averages about 12, so he's a little bit lower there. He passed out of it 4 of the 8 times he drove to the basket. He didn't get any assists out of those passes, so drives and kicks were not working for them. And you do wonder if that's going to be something, the added size with both Robinson and Towns out there, the fact that Tibbs maybe has discovered that staggering Brunson and Towns more will help him out, if this is the key to turning this series around. Game 4, Knicks at Pacers. We saw this open 2.5 with a total of 222.5. To me, the total is going to be the interesting aspect here. Again, if we're going to continue down this path of the pace being played, the way the Knicks want this thing to go, we've had 2 straight games go under the total. Remember, game 1 opened 222.5, and eventually actually closed 221.5, went way over. Market over-adjusted, opened 227.5 for game 1, market bet it down to 224, went under, same opening total and closing total for game 3. We're starting to finally see this get back to the open where we were for game 1, and I do wonder if that's going to be continue to be the thing here. This Knicks team wants to play slow, and they have, at the very least through 3 games, discovered how to slow Indiana down. And on the flip side, again, we talk about the zigzag, which actually has not been that profitable here in this round. Knicks close as to a 1.5-point underdogs in game 1. They are now 2.5-point underdogs in game 2, just because they lost, right? But I would actually agree with this move, because these two teams, I think, are closer to equals with one another. We saw that in game 1. The market rated them as near equals to each other. We saw what the result was. Game 2 and onward, the Knicks, because they had lost the game and then again lost once more, they got upgraded because you're supposed to zig when everything zags. We'll see if the market holds strong here, but I wouldn't be surprised if Indiana gets a little bit of action back at home, especially after losing game 1. But let's not take my word for it. When we come back, Zach Cohen's going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on what we watched, what we're going to see tonight in the Western Conference Finals, and what's going to happen out in the French Open. Very excited to hear from Zach when we come back here on Money Moves.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming up in 15 minutes, everybody's favorite Minions fan, Greg Peterson, will be with us. Maybe we get to the bottom of my disdain for the Texas Roadhouse with Greg Peterson. That could be something that potentially is there. But first, we head out to the Progressive Guest Line, and we welcome in Zach Cohen. Follow him on Twitter, @BettingOnX. A lot of great work up on the site, as usual, from Zach. But the French Open, obviously underway. We are into our second day. All right, first general question for you, Zach. Looking at the French Open, if somebody doesn't bet a lot of tennis, this always sticks out in these first few rounds. A lot of heavy favorites. As general bettors don't really gravitate toward big spreads like that, how do you just generally bet these opening rounds? Are we utilizing moneyline parlays? How do we attack some of these things with such big prices?
Yeah, I usually am not on the matches that include the huge favorites. There's just not a lot of value to milk out of those. I will say, like, some of the bets that I like to make during majors that you really don't get at other tournaments are, you know, totals on sets. So you could take, you know, if you think that an Alcaraz is going to dominate but maybe lose a set, you could take over 3.5 sets and get a really good price on something like that. So that would be him losing one set to the opponent that, you know, that he's facing. But I do usually avoid those big favorites. I try to find value. There's so many matches early in the tournaments that I can usually find quite a bit. This is actually my favorite time of the tournament, too, because there's a lot of, you know, smaller matches that I think you can find value with.
Yep. You know, I think the totally original thought, I think Djokovic is going to win the quarter. I don't know where I got that thought from, but that's mine. So I will establish that. All right, real quick. You do have an article up on the website of VSiN.com. I don't want to give it all away. Any one single play that sticks out to you that you would share, and then everything else can be up on the website.
Yeah, well, the only one in that article left that has not started is Taylor Townsend moneyline to beat Elisabetta Cocheretto. And that is a match where Cocheretto's viewed as a clay court specialist. She has been mostly good on clay throughout her career, but she has been really lousy since the start of the 2025 season and especially bad over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So I think there's a real opportunity for Townsend, a fun American player that has a lot of power, a really good ability to, you know, win points at the net and a big serve to win in conditions that I think think people view as less favorable for her. But at the same time, it's going to be a night match there. That's going to really slow things down. Townsend's one kind of weakness is that she doesn't move the court well. But when the ball is not moving through the court as quickly, she's going to have more time to kind of track those shots down and just kind of win that match with her power. So I think it's actually a really good opportunity for her to win this match.
All right. I'm a jackass. I didn't realize the time conversion. I messed that all up. But I will say really quickly for the audience with this going on, when will you have the articles up for the French Open?
Around 2 or 3 p.m. Pacific time, I'll have them up for the following day. So you'll have, you know, plenty of time to get them in. I do occasionally add picks in the morning for the later matches. So I'll usually do that about an hour or so before those matches start. Sometimes I tweet it. Sometimes I forget. I try to be better about it. But I do find that when I tweet that I have updated the picks page, those picks lose immediately.
Yeah, when you can't, hey man, when you have an edge, you have an edge, and you can't give that away. Speaking of Edge Boost, first ever bank account built for bettors, ensuring all gambling transactions are approved. No usage fees, no minimums, or cashback rewards. 100% approval for all betting deposits as well. Sign up today, edgeboost.bet. Promo code is money. Deposit $25, and Edge Boost will match the deposit. That is edgeboost.bet. All right, sticking with that term, I texted you guys. I did not get a response. Now, I feel like you said you will, you know, you watched the game on tape delay. I think maybe you were just saying that as an excuse for not texting me back. It's fine. But I texted you guys last night. Sometimes it just helps to have Carl Anthony Towns on your team. Is that just the big takeaway from last night for Indiana, New York?
I think the context that you gave was a little bit weirder, saying that sometimes having the best player in the series is, yeah, I do think that that was the difference, though. I mean, Towns' shot making in quarters 3 and 4 was just out of this world, and that is ultimately what dragged the Knicks back into that game. And it did feel like a game that Indiana had kind of had won. It felt a lot like game one. It did, you know, the flurry didn't happen as late as it did in that game one game, and it wasn't, you know, Nesmith scoring 20 points in the final 2 minutes, but it was Towns kind of single-handedly putting the Knicks on his back and erasing a 20-point deficit. So it really was similar to me. But I will say, like, I did not trust the Pacers in that game three spot. It's a team that has weirdly struggled in game threes throughout these playoffs, and a coach that, for as good as he is, Rick Carlisle, has been really bad in game threes throughout his career. So I think that, you know, that was a kind of desperation thing at play there, where the Knicks knew that their season was on the line there. If they went down 0-3, they had real no chance of coming back. Now I kind of think moving to game four, the Pacers are going to get back in the win column.
Yeah, I would say it really did seem – I thought there were two things. It seemed like they got really fat and happy pretty quick when they were up by 20 and everything was moving and everything was fine. The other thing, which could have a lasting effect in this series, are we sure Aaron Nesmith's going to be healthy for game four? Because he did come back into that game yesterday, but that was a really tough ankle injury. And with a day off, it actually feels worse than it starts to feel better when you're not having all that adrenaline pumping in. We've seen this line move up to 2.5 from game one – or from game three – but Nesmith worries me a little bit, but I would generally agree. Like, do you think the Pacers in game four in a better spot? Would you lay 2.5?
Actually, was it the same ankle that he had surgically repaired? Because that could be a problem for them if it was. But I do like the Pacers in game four. I thought that Halliburton played a really weird and passive game in game three. And I do think that, like, the Knicks got good minutes out of their bench, which is something that I really don't anticipate happening moving forward. Like, I do think that's genuinely a really bad bench. I know that people get on Tibbs for not playing those guys during the regular season, but how can you when they're not that reliable? So I think that they're going to get, you know, just a worse performance out of those guys in game four. And I think Indiana is going to come with a better just mindset.
We've seen this pace really slow down in favor of New York. The last two games have gone under the total. Is that a sign of things to come in this series as well? Because this total now, we got as high as 227.5 at one point in this series. Now we're back down to the closing number for game one, 221.5.
Yeah, I do think that the Knicks are winning out in that battle of the pace. And I think that, you know, that was their goal heading into this series, is try to slow it down, try to win on the defensive end. But I will say, I said it to you off the show, like, I don't think that that battle is doing them many favors, because I think that this Indiana team is better defensively than they're giving credit for. And I think that the Pacers, when slowed down into the half court, they have more time to kind of pick out Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns and attack them. We've seen now Brunson getting foul trouble pretty much every game in this series. Towns more of the same. So I think that when you do slow it down and try to make them play a half-court game, that's when they can kind of be more cerebral in the way that they're attacking you.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns on the floor together. a negative 24.5 net rating and a defensive rating of 134.4 in this series. So it has not gone well. And that's just this series. A larger sample size. We've kind of seen little things here and there throughout the regular season. All right, let's transition to tonight. You know, variance is funny, right? Sometimes you just get the minor correction back to the mean. Other times you get to pour it on and shoot 51% from three and absolutely annihilate your opponent. That's exactly what happened to Minnesota in game three. So where does this pendulum land here tonight for game four? You know, you and I were texting about this in the Harvard Handicappers group chat recipes. Like, you're waiting for those shots to drop. They should have dropped. Does that mean they cool down here today? How do you handle what was a massive performance from beyond the arc for Minnesota in game three?
Yeah, I feel almost like a terrible person to ask about this because I had the Timberwolves in both games one and game two, and I've been stubborn in thinking that this Minnesota team can hang with Oklahoma City. So I don't really see any reason to go away from it here. I'm on the Timberwolves plus 3.5. I didn't go as big on game four as I did on game three. I just thought, you know, the desperation of that game three spot and kind of being a game that the Thunder probably felt they could afford to lose definitely played into Minnesota's hands a little bit. But I will say it wasn't just the three-point shooting in game three. You know, they also shot a lot better from two. They only turned the ball over 10 times. And I think that that is something to keep an eye on when we see Minnesota play at home the rest of this series. The OKC team that is so good at forcing you to turn the ball over, that goes down a little bit when they are on the road, when the crowd is not in their, you know, in their favor, really getting in the minds of the opposing players. And I do think that the way that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is officiated is going to make a big difference in this game. And I do think that he gets a friendlier whistle at home. I think we've seen all throughout the playoffs too, OKC's role players have just not been reliable when going on the road. This is a team that I believe has a plus 24 net rating at home throughout the postseason, minus 8 or so right around there when playing on the road. I did mention it at VSiN.com, like some blowouts definitely played their way into those numbers, but they are pretty, like, you know, just jarring when looking at them, just how bad they are when playing away from home.
Yeah, real quick note on that, the specifics, 7-1 straight up, 6-2 ATS with a plus 25 net rating at home in this postseason, 3-3 straight up, 0-6 ATS away from home with a negative 7.6 net rating. So they have not been good away from home. And then a quick note, in an oddity that was pointed out by ESPN, teams that have lost by 40 points in the playoffs have never won a title. So who knows if that's going to actually stand true here at this one. All right, real quick, last minute with you, any player prop angles for tonight in the Western Conference Finals?
Yeah, I love Naz Reid to go over 1.5 made threes again. It's minus 140 after being minus 145 in game three. He knocked down two threes on three attempts in that game. I think that he probably would have knocked down three or four if it wasn't a blowout because he just kind of looked more confident shooting at home, which wasn't surprising considering his regular season splits. He shot 42% from three at home during the regular season, about 34% on the road. He was really struggling heading into that game. I think he was 0 for 12 in the series. Just really was not looking confident from three in Oklahoma City. Heading back to the Target Center, I felt better about him. Now that he has made, you know, two, seen them go through the hole, I think he's going to shoot even better in game four.
All right, Zach, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And again, about 2 p.m. Pacific time for the French Open articles, correct?
Yeah, 2 or 3. My wife's dragging me out of the house to do some things today.
All right. It's always good to get out of that. Touch a little grass, buddy. All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
At Betting on X, up on X. When we come back, Greg Peterson joins us to defend the honor of the Texas Roadhouse and also give us some Major League Baseball, please.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So there have not been many, like, one of the things I like the most about media is a lot of people in media have very big egos. And so when you have a bunch of big egos, they clash. There are multiple fights here at the Vegas Stats and Information Network, both on the air and off the air, that I think are very strong. I was involved in an altercation off the air in the early goings of the Vegas Stats and Information Network where I may or may not have been ready to stand 10 toes down, but it was broken up. Somebody does not work in the network anymore. We saw the great Amal Shah and Patrick Maher beef. That was absolutely fantastic. But I think they all pale in comparison to what is about to be unveiled right now. Out of the Progressive guest line stands one Greg Hoops Peterson, ready to roll, ready to rock, and ready to defend. We have not spoken since I declared after Mother's Day the Texas Roadhouse was the worst meal I had had. Greg, go ahead. Would you like to defend the honor outside? I don't want to hear about the biscuits. That's the only thing they got. Go ahead. Defend them without saying the word biscuit. Come on.
Oh, no, it's not the biscuits because it's the rolls. The rolls are absolutely tremendous, so you are mistaken there if you think that they are biscuits. That is Red Lobster right there. We will not be putting in their Red Lobster. The rolls are amazing. You get the fried pickles. The steaks are all hand cut in person by a butcher inside the restaurant right there. It is the best meal for the price, dollar for dollar. We're here at the Vegas Asset Information Network looking to get the people the best return on investment. Texas Roadhouse, best return on investment out there.
That was very strong, very strong. I did not know that they hand cut the meat. That's very good. It's a very good point. We don't want to waste too much time on this, but like I said, Greg, I did go on a high volume day. It was Mother's Day, and I'm willing to give it another shot. I will not write it off, but that does not change the fact that it was maybe the worst meal I've ever had. All right, with that, I got to get my last shot in. Major League Baseball, before we get to plays for today, a little bit later in the program, I'm going to talk about the AL Cy Young market. And I think there is a name to add that is not Tarek Skubal, and that I think would be somewhat shocking after Skubal goes out against the Guardians, pitches a complete game, 94 pitch, 2-hit, 13 strikeout performance. Absolutely dominant. He's the odds on, or no, he's not odds on in most places. He is even money in most places to win AL Cy Young. But am I barking up the wrong tree? Skubal's been incredible, but would you look at this AL Cy Young and think there's a couple of guys you could look at and say, no, I think that guy's got a shot?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're still looking at it being only a 50-55 game sample size. Mm-hmm. And the way that Jacob deGrom has been able to round into form at 12-1 has been tremendous. And here's really the sleeper that I take a look at. Chris with a K, Bubic of the Royals, currently at 30-1. This guy has been absolutely insane. Went out there, I believe, on Sunday with another great performance for a Royals team that's pitching really well. Like, the Royals offense has been terrible this year, yet somehow, some way, they're above 500. Chris with a K, Bubic has been the big reason why. He gets strikeouts. He doesn't walk, guys. He's got a sub 2 ERA. This guy has went out there time and time and gotten the job done. He hasn't been Tarek Skubal, but I mean, at 30-1, I would say that that's worth a flyer.
7 innings, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts, and 2 walks yesterday on the road against Minnesota Twins. The performance that Greg is referencing, and he has pitched at least 7 innings, 3 of his last 4 starts, and has been incredible. And 30-1, pretty good. By the way, Greg did mention one of the names that I'll be looking at. We'll talk about that coming up as part of Call Me Crazy. All right, let's go to your article. You go to VSiN.com. You can check this out. Greg writes them up every single day. He's got his best bets on the card. So let's just start in general. When you looked at it, what was the biggest edge for you today when you looked at the way you priced the games and where the market was going?
Why in the world are the Baltimore Orioles and the St. Louis Cardinals darn near a pick'em? Now, in a lot of places, the Cardinals have flipped to being a very slight favorite. And great word is due. The Orioles were able to win 2 games over the weekend over the Boston Red Sox, but this team has been absolutely terrible. Charlie Morton has been a human pinata this year. He's got north of a 70 ERA. He's given up 2 home runs per 9 innings, north of 5 walks per 9 innings. Going against Eric Fetty, who last year had his home and road splits, but he's been quite a bit better on the road this year. St. Louis, I recognize, not necessarily a high home run team or anything like that, but a lot of guys like Brendan Donovan, Lars Nubar and company that do a nice job move a lineup for Baltimore. It's not even like the lineup's been great. They've been outside the top 10 outside the top 20 in terms of runs per game. They've had their struggles in the bullpen. The Cardinals rounding into form with regards to bullpen. Now Cardinals, a little bit of a different team away from home, but being able to get them right around -110 or so, sign me up for the Cardinals money line.
Can you see a scenario, they're +175 to make the playoffs, can they navigate their way through this crowded National League wildcard, especially with the Padres falling down to earth, they had that 6-game losing streak a while back, the Giants look fine, and the Arizona Diamondbacks have slipped out of the picture with their current 5-game losing streak, yeah, not out, but still 4 games back. Can the Cardinals navigate a crowded NL, make it, and be worth it at +175 or so to make the postseason?
Personally, I would rather look at them to be able to win the division just because I do think that those NL West teams are going to be a little bit too dominant. And then additionally, I just don't think that they're leapfrogging whoever doesn't win the NL East out of the Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies. I think that one of those teams are going to be able to make the postseason. Right now, the Cardinals just 2 games back of the Chicago Cubs. You can probably get a little bit of a better plus number on them to be able to win the Central. I would look there rather than just odds to make the playoffs.
4-1 to win the NL Central, the St. Louis Cardinals. All right, we were just talking about Chris Bubic, Chris with the K, Kansas City with the K, taking on Cincinnati. What do we do here? Michael Lorenzen getting the start, and Nick Martinez will oppose him.
I went with the Royals here. They have just been so good with their overall pitching. And right now, this is down to about -110, even in some places where you sit at circa -108 for Lorenzen. Has he been like the most dominant pitcher in the world? No, but all you need is like 5 solid innings where he gives up 2 runs, and then that bullpen can go to work. Lucas Sercich, Carlos Aceves has been one of the best 1-2 punches in all of baseball. You've been able to have guys like Steven Cruz come on strong. And for the Reds, their road numbers, I feel like, are very much warped, because you may recall there was a game a few weeks ago where they scored 24 runs on the Orioles, banged around Charlie Morton in that one. If you take that game out of the fold, they've been a relatively average offense, and they really had to utilize a lot of bullpen pieces. Yesterday, they played the game against the Chicago Cubs. Thing was harebrained. Thing was crazy. So I do think that with the Royals, being able to get them right around about a minus 110 in this ordeal, their money line has quite a bit of value.
All right, let's go to another interesting series in that the Chicago White Sox got a series winner over the Texas Rangers this last weekend. Now they go to take on the New York Mets. We saw Alonso wake up. They take their series from the Dodgers. How do you handicap this matchup here today? Clay Holmes has been pitching really, really well for New York.
Yes, and Adrian Hauser has a lot of familiarity with the Mets because he was on the New York Mets at this time 12 to 24 months ago. I think that he's going to be able to go out there, give a relatively solid performance, and White Sox just aren't hitting in general. Even if Adrian Hauser can't duplicate what he did at his first start where he went six shutout innings, it's a case where the White Sox are contributing about 2.8, 2.9 runs per game away from him, getting a little bit healthier with Andrew Benintendi, Mike Tauchman coming off the injury list, but they just have not been able to generate a lot of offense. And something that I like to look at as well, these teams coming off of Sunday Night Baseball, having to play on Monday, typically they just put a lot into that game. If I had to play the money line at a plus 250, it's just an offer that I can't refuse on the Chicago White Sox. But really, I think what this comes down to is both of these offenses, in my opinion, don't generate a ton of offense where it's not necessarily been the world's best weather out there in the northeast part of the country. Hasn't heated up the way that we would think. So I do like that under. And if I had to play the money line, I would be looking at the White Sox.
Greg Peterson at GUnit underscore 81. You can find his articles up at VSiN.com. It's for VSiN Pro subscribers. And folks, it's your last chance to get in on this. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Check it out today through May 31st. You can check this out. Lock in 14 months for just $199. 2 extra months free when you use the promo code PRO at checkout. Less than 50 cents a day. It's Greg's articles. It's Zach Cohen, who we just spoke to. Adam Burke, our NFL and NBA betting. Everything that you have in between there, all for less than $200. That equates to less than 50 cents a day. Plus, get the email and more. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Check it all out. Promo code is PRO to get some of the great work that includes one Greg Peterson. All right, really quick, let's stay in the National League East. Just a general question here. The Mets are 2 games back from the Philadelphia Phillies. That seems to be a two-horse race. The Braves are 8.5 games out from first place. That dynamic at the top, how do you see that playing out between Philadelphia and New York?
As long as the Mets are able to remain close, I would be looking at the Mets, because there's one thing that we need to keep in mind. If the Mets are anywhere even close to making the playoffs, you know that Steve Cohen is busting out the checkbook. You know that they are going to pull out all the stops in order to be able to acquire guys at the trade deadline. And I think that Juan Soto is going to look a little bit better here towards back half of the season. And I think it's a little bit overblown, some of his struggles. When you're getting paid the amount of money that he is, I just don't know if there's any player on the face of planet Earth in any sport that's worth that sort of money. But you know what? With the New York Mets, they've been able to get some good production out of the pitching. The bullpen has looked relatively solid as well. They played a little bit of a tough stretch of their schedule already. So I would be looking at the Mets just because I know what they're going to add at the deadline.
Really quick, last 60 seconds, because I want people to go to the website, check out your article for the rest of your plays. The other team in this division, are we donezo here? I've been beating the drum. You can't start the season the way you did if you're the Braves, even if you're getting healthy. And then everybody gets Randy, Greg. They got over 500, and then they lose 4 out of 5.
With the Atlanta Braves, it's a little bit rough. I don't think that they're done quite yet for the playoffs, but in terms of the division, they just dug themselves a little bit too deep of a hole. Ronald Acuña Jr. coming back is obviously massive, and if he could get Spencer Strider to look like the Spencer Strider of old, yeah, there's some upside here. There's, I think, a lot more game-to-game betting value with regards to the Atlanta Braves rather than value in the futures.
We have now finally seen that flip. No, minus 115, the favorite in terms of Atlanta Braves to make the playoffs. Greg, always good to talk to you, bud. Thanks very much. Good job on those articles.
Absolutely, and thank you for considering Texas Roadhouse for another opportunity.
Of course, I'm a fair person. When presented with more information, I will change my opinion. I think that is a very smart thing to do, so I will give it one more crack. I understand I didn't put it in the best position, so I will go and give that one more shot. Come on. All right, when we come back, call me crazy, but we'll talk about that American League Cy Young and 2 NFL points, an alternate win total yet again, and a division play to make. That's when we return here on Money Moves. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy.
For Call Me Crazy, but...
I don't bring the same the requisite energy that Stormy Bonatoni brings for something like this. That's fine. I think we'll get through this. Do we have a where in the world is Stormy Bonatoni today? Okay. All I know is that Stormy texted us one of the nights over the weekend while she was out in Italy, and she took a shot at me, and so I just didn't respond, and I'm probably out on ever returning any text messages to Stormy until she returns, because I'm a professional. I will do it. All right, let's start with this one. We have this clip. Let's fire this and get this ready if we can. I will blow the for a moment. Aaron Rodgers. All right, we still don't have an official date. We still don't have whether or not he's going to sign. During the break, Brian Ortega was complaining about children. Well, this is the theme. Listen to this stupid child ask a question to Aaron Rodgers and listen to the answer.
Will Aaron Rodgers ever go to the Bears?
Oh, boy. Security, can we get her out of here? I need some security. Security, get her out of here.
Take it easy on her. That's fine.
No, but I believe there's a team that might play in Chicago this year.
Let's go!
On a road trip. I don't know. I'm not sure. Gotta check it out.
Are you speaking in code?
I love Chicago, though. Way more than they love me. It's been a great relationship, all one way.
Okay, so I don't know what's great or better about that clip. The fact that the crowd did not get his reference at all or get his joke. Folks, the Pittsburgh Steelers play the Chicago Bears in Week 12. He's referencing the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's saying that he's going to play in Chicago this year, but just against them. He is going to sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, he can't just do it because that would take away from the intention that we get, but still... The market, we pointed this out when we did our market power ratings, and this is going to tie into the Call Me Crazy, trust me. We talked about the way that this team is getting priced, but this is a team that is being priced with Aaron Rodgers. Sounds like he's going to be there. So call me crazy, but Aaron Rodgers should just cut the bleep and just sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The other part of this Call Me Crazy, to tie it into a bet, give me every bit of the alternate under for the Pittsburgh Steelers here this season. I get it. Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. I understand all of the ramifications of trying to fade the Pittsburgh Steelers. This isn't, I think they're going to be terrible, so I'm going to bet the alt under. We've talked about this. This is going to be in the NFL betting guide. Generally, teams don't fall on their win total. They will either very much exceed or fall under expectations for the season. So you can get away with playing some of these alternate unders. So under 7.5 at about a +210 or +225 price, excuse me, is something worth playing here. Because it's not just about Aaron Rodgers, right? Rodgers actually got a bad rap last season for the way that the Jets season went. He was perfectly average, but he's a year older, and he was average last year. If you look at a lot of his numbers, when you're talking about big-time throws or throws that are farther downfield into tighter windows, one of the lower points of his career when you talk about totality of that number. Averaged up the target pretty low, yards per attempt pretty low, and we've seen these numbers decline. He is probably going to be average yet again, maybe even slightly below average as he continues to go in that direction, because that's just age. That's what happens when you play in football. But I think the other part of this is that I don't think we talk about enough. There is this thing that the Steelers are assumed to be a great defense, and they're a fine defense, especially up front. But if you look at the granular numbers for their pass defense last year, they were an average to below average group, and that didn't get that much better in the offseason. Yes, they're going to be healthier up front, but I don't trust them on the back end with their defense against a very tough schedule, especially when you're talking about the offenses you're going to face. I think there is a reality now. We finally see this. Wouldn't it be ironic that you get your best quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin finally goes under in terms of under 500? But I think that's going to be the case here. So call me crazy. Aaron Rodgers just signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers to get it over with. And also, call me crazy, but alternate under 7.5 for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think the way to go here. All right, second up. Let's stay in the National Football League. You know, as you can tell, I was kind of doing some NFL stuff over the weekend, looking at everything, starting to get ready for the season, which is going to be around the corner. Call me crazy, but give me Jacksonville at 3-1 to win the AFC South. The Texans, I don't think, had a very good offseason. If you look at some of the numbers for the Houston Texans last season, specifically when it came to C.J. Stroud and the protection he was given, it was absolutely abysmal. He was the most pressured quarterback in the National Football League by total dropbacks, right? His offensive line was awful. How the Texans respond is by shipping off Laurie Tunsil and, of course, just throwing bodies at the problem that you don't know are going to be great. Now, Bobby Slowick's out. You have a new offensive coordinator, so maybe a change in scheme is going to turn things around for you. And C.J. Stroud, I think, deserves a ton of credit for playing as well as you can when you're talking about playing under pressure. But still, last year, over 270 dropbacks considered under pressure. He threw 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, committed to turnover-worthy play rate of 3.1%, all pretty high here. I don't think that's getting much better heading into this season. I think that they are being overvalued in terms of where they're at in the division. And look, the division stinks, but part of that is Houston. I think the other part of this is the wide receiver core, well, on paper it looks better. You're also trusting the two rookies are going to play a very big role here for C.J. Stroud. I think they're going to be great on defense. I think Stroud is still very good, but I think that offensive line, and we have seen bad offensive lines upend worse or better teams before, and I think that's going to be the case. I think Jacksonville's got the most upside here. You've still got Lawrence. You've got a good skill position set. I'm not asking the Jacksonville Jaguars to win 10 or more games. I just think their odds of winning the division are higher than what is given out there. And by the way, we're seeing plus 260 there. You can find them at 3-1, MGM at 3-1, other spots of 3-1 as well. So again, as we always say, shop around. But I thought 3-1 was a price worth investing in here for Jacksonville to win the AFC South. I don't want to go Indianapolis. I think there is some upside there, but that's if Anthony Richardson hits, and the times in which that actually happens, I think, are very few and far between. So if you look at the way this division is priced, I think there is the most value in asking Jacksonville, with a new front office, with a new head coach, with a new forward way of thinking when it comes to their offense, that they have the best opportunity to potentially win the AFC South and are priced accordingly. All right, one more here. This one's in Major League Baseball. We mentioned it over the weekend. Tarek Skubal was incredible, right? He goes complete game against the Cleveland Guardians over the weekend. Absolutely brilliant. His best start, think about that, the best start of his career is what we just watched transpire in the 5-0 win for the Tigers. 13 strikeouts, 94 pitches was absolutely crazy. Or call me crazy, but give me Jacob DeGrom to win the American League Cy Young 12-1. He pitches today, so watch him go and get absolutely smoked by the Toronto Blue Jays after we make this proclamation. But DeGrom's numbers have been absolutely tremendous throughout this entire year. Now, the crazy part about this is not looking at a guy and going, well, yeah, of course, DeGrom with the sub-2.5 ERA has a shot to win American League Cy Young. What's so nutty about that? I think the crazy part is trusting that Jacob DeGrom is going to stay healthy, but everything looks so good for him at this point right now. The strikeout profile is there. 81st percentile or higher in terms of K rate, whiff rate, chase rate. He's getting guys. He is challenging them. He looks every bit as dominant there. Some of the hard contact numbers are still there, but this guy outside of that has been absolutely brilliant. And I think that he is going to have a very good opportunity, should he stay healthy, to take this away from Tarek Skubal. And I do wonder if we start to do this, as you see now Skubal after yesterday, the odds on favor to win this award. And by the way, this would be my second foray into the American League Cy Young because they do have Hunter Brown, and Brown got knocked around in his last start against the Tampa Bay Rays, who have all of a sudden gotten a little hot here. But if you look at DeGrom and the underlying numbers, there really isn't any sign that this thing is going to start to slow down here. And I think DeGrom's going to be pretty live. So 12-1 to win the American League Cy Young, adding that in with the Hunter Brown ticket I got from the preseason as well. So we'll see if we can try to go against Tarek Skubal. And a shout out as well to Greg Peterson, because the good call here as well was Chris Bubich. That has been absolutely brilliant so far in this season. Bubich right now in the range of about 30-1. Really nothing sticks out about the profile for Bubich that would really freak you out. And in fact, you look at the strikeout numbers again, he's been absolutely brilliant. The contact numbers are really what stick out. He's been great there. 76th percentile in hard hit rate allowed, 72nd percentile in barrel rate allowed. Average exit velocity, one of the best you're going to see in Major League Baseball. Bubich has been brilliant. And again, when you look at those metrics and for the underlying numbers and you're trying to see, hey, is there a sign that this guy's going to fall off? Is there a sign that this dude has been getting away with it? Bubich is not one of those dudes. Every single metric points to him being pretty solid, and it's a good shout from Greg that Bubich is going to be pretty live here. But outside of that, I will not get to Brian Ortega's call me crazy, because apparently Ortega had a pretty rough weekend when it came to going to watch, what, Mission Impossible? Is that the 8th movie? Yeah. I'll just say, as a father, it's tough to get out, and so sometimes parents have to do things. I would never bring my child to a movie in which, you know, there's a lot of people and it's probably loud and terrible. I had a rule, actually, a steadfast rule, that I would not bring my child to a movie theater unless they were 5 or older when we had our first kid. We broke that at 4, but that was for the Paw Patrol movie. So, see, you know what I mean? I am a man of principle, and I will stick to that. All right, Coming up next, we still have plenty of Major League Baseball to get to. Second hour, we're going to hit some of that. Dustin Sweetelson's going to join us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on some Major League Baseball plays, including, I think he's got some thoughts on the American League Cy Young as well after what we saw from Scooble yesterday. So that's kind of the theme of today in Major League Baseball. We'll also get his thoughts on his New York Knicks as Karl-Anthony Towns has helped cut this series in half, the series deficit, that is. And we'll get to our perspective on what's happening in the Western Conference Finals. I think it's easy to say that the Timberwolves are going to turn this thing around and continue to perform the way they did. I think the market's a little too low, but that really random swing, that really strong swing and variance in terms of the three-point shooting has me a little pause with concern. But we'll talk about that coming up in about 30 minutes here on Money Moves.